Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
Welcome to Golden State of Mindcast. Ivan Betker here with Bram Kincheloe and the return of our fearless leader who's been in exile, Nate Parham. Nate, welcome back.
I'm glad to be back.
You're gonna bring the basketball knowledge that Bram and I cannot possibly provide because I don't know
about all that.
It's been harder and harder to catch all of these games out on the East Coast, I gotta say. But
that's true.
Especially with the holidays coming and everything, family and friends and things to do. But we're doing our best. I need to catch up on last night's game, but I do think we should talk about it. It was a 45 point win, which is ridiculous, and that's the most of any team so far this season. Which I think it's fitting that comes from the Warriors. I looked this up, so we've got the 45 point win. We've got a 43 point win, 37, 36, and 29. Those are the top five point differentials. And then there's like a 29 point loss, a 21 point loss. So it's kind of a little bit of a peaks and valleys thing for the Warriors so far. But Nate, tell us about last night's game, what you were able to catch of it. What were they? Was it just a matter of the Blazers not able to play the defense requisite to even contend here, or what were you seeing?
The Blazers, yeah. I mean, the Blazers. You know, the first three threes Curry had were just like he was basically not being guarded. I mean, it was kind of like from the first quarter, you just knew that this game is just going to get out of hand really quickly. And so then the question is, well, you know, with the Warriors, we've seen it a few times. This is not a knock on the team, as much as I think it's a fact right now. They get bored sometimes. And so the only question was really like, well, it's the first quarter, you know, will they hit one of those lulls where they just start like going through the motions? And I think last night's game was just a situation where A, they never really hit one of those cruise control lulls where they went through the motions, and B, the Blazers never really put up a fight. And it was just, you know, Klay Thompson on Damian Lillard is a good matchup for the Warriors. So Lillard didn't really get off in the first half, and then I think it just snowballed. It wasn't, you know, we could get into the technical aspects of it, and Apricot obviously does that for us, but I mean, really just it was kind of a laugher from start to finish.
Lillard usually has Blazers, pretty good games against the Warriors too. Even
he does. I mean, he can explode. Yeah, I mean, he can definitely explode. And last year, obviously, they gave us the business with like a 40 point win or whatever. I think it was 36 or whatever they gave us in Portland last year. So yeah, they can obviously compete with us, but last night was not one of those times. It was like trading threes from twos early on in the game. It was just like, that's just not going to work, and it was just obvious. Right. You know, and they've been in a slump for a while. They've had some injuries. Their Festus Ezeli signing, which maybe we could talk about, because I'm kind of sad for Festus Ezeli, but.
Yeah, well, let's stick with Portland for a minute since you're rolling on that, and yeah. You know, there's the Festus Ezeli signing and injury, and then there's the we'll talk about Festus first. So you know, I think we were all pretty fond of him, and that was kind of a hard loss, I think. I don't know if this is fair to say, but I'm gonna jump in on the Barnes hate again. But I think it's
tell us what you really think about the Festus Ezeli signing.
Well, no, so I think it's fair to say that most of us kind of bemoaned the loss of Festus more than Barnes. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's totally fair. I think actually what people bemoaned the loss of the most was the Andrew Bogut thing. I think with Bogut, out of all three of those players, you know, him being Australian maybe obfuscates some of his political leanings or some of the stuff that's going on beneath the exterior of his like very sort of funny, like tell it how it is. But again, like out of the three of those, Bogut was the biggest loss, at least in my mind. And, you know, he has barely played. He's been hurt. He's been, involved in, you know, sort of weird back and forth with, fans on Twitter that he never quite got into as a member of the Warriors, which maybe their PR team, like Raymond Ritter, is like super on it, keeping some of that stuff.
It always under wraps. It always kind of felt like he was teetering on that. Like they were always close, right? Like
totally.
You didn't really know what was going to happen with Bogey. I totally agree that like from an actual performance perspective, team performance perspective, he was going to be the hardest loss. But even then, like Bogut's reputation, I think with fans was a little iffy. You know, because I mean, Festus too had plenty of injuries, but Bogut was, you know, kind of seen as not always super reliable, especially in the playoffs. He would disappear at times, and you know, maybe it was because he was run down, or this kind of impression that that he, you know, he would like injure a toe a little bit and, you know, miss 10 games or whatever, right? And so I don't know if like a lot of people were kind of. If he had the same level of like excitement about him that Festus did, and I might just be not remembering that correctly, but Festus always had a little bit of like the potential stuff, you know, like, oh, right. If he puts it together and he's healthy, then like he could be better than Bogut, or at least like a good replacement for, you know, another 10 years.
Right.
Totally. And so then I think when, you know, getting back obviously to the Festus thing, like when we lost him, maybe there was, like you're saying, it was a little bit sadder to see him go because, you know, also the Warriors had drafted him. Like he was a homegrown guy. You know, we'd gotten him out of Vanderbilt. We'd watched him grow. There was that whole thing where they had like pranked him and told him he was going to get cut. You guys remember that for April Fool's last year?
Vaguely.
Yeah. They like texted him and all of the teammates were like, yeah, man, it was so great to, I think they teamed up with a radio station and he was in an Uber or something. And then they like, purposely turned on the radio station
and, like, cried about and was recording it, right? Which is totally legit.
He took it pretty well. He was just like, what? And then like Klay Thompson texted him like, great to know you, bro. And he was like, Klay never texts me. Like that was what threw me off, is that like, why is Klay texting me or something like that? But I do think that it's really sad to watch how his career has gone so far. And kind of with all three of those guys, you feel like the Warriors did sort of dodge somewhat of a major bullet where they didn't like Barnes didn't sign the restricted agent free agency offer sheet that they offered him, which would have negated Durant. First of all, that was the first major bullet, is that Barnes correctly to his credit predicted that he would be able to get max money on the open market. So Barnes leaving and then them being able to unload Festus, or Festus signed the restricted, or they just didn't match, right, with the Blazers.
Yeah.
Did he have any other offers? I'm trying to remember now.
The issue was he was coming off an injury-prone year. So the Blazers were kind of, I mean, that's what we were talking about, like when in Vegas with the Blazers edge guys. Like it was a really weird offer because they were kind of competing against themselves, and so it was weird to make him that offer at all.
Late in the period too. Like
it was late in the period. Yeah. It was already kind of known, I guess, behind the scenes that he had some big injury issues coming up, and like right after they signed him, it was like he's not going to be able to start the season or whatever. And I think that was, yeah, I think the sadness for me is he's just one of those players who I really thought last year, the beginning of the first half of last year, he was really starting to come around, right. Really starting to be an impact player. So when you think about potential, and before, like KD was kind of like a fantasy at that point, right? So, you know, it was kind of like, wow, we've got our center of the future, and all the things you guys are saying about Bogut, but also he is injury prone. He's nearing the end of his career. Around, he was going to have to take a pay cut. He was willing to do that. So, I mean, there was some sense that Bogut is not going to be the future. Festus will be the future, right? So I think personally, like seeing him kind of come around, thinking that he was going to be the future if there was no KD in the future, and then kind of just the injuries again, and we've never really, he looks like another one of those big guys. We've seen this so many times before with big guys, and Lynn's awful history of big guys and injuries.
I know, right? It seems like
so often, like where we see these big guys get these lower extremity injuries, and then it just ruins their careers. And Festus was a guy who I think, he was also the draft pick. He was homegrown. It's a shame to see it happen again. And I think he was for the Warriors, like for a team that had spent so much time in their history, like since Wilt Chamberlain looking for a center, to finally find, like, you finally got a team now with two. You have Bogut and Festus down this way. Was I think it's sad. I mean, obviously he's not on our team anymore. People don't care about the human side of sports anymore, so it might not be a big deal, but I think it's strong.
This is just unnecessarily hot take right there.
It is.
I feel like all three of us. Nate's just coming off of his sabbatical, just spitting fire right here, man.
Yeah.
People don't care about the human side of sports anymore.
Yeah.
Since when? Like, when would you put the time range
in? We could talk about that a little bit later.
Well, Brett,
back to
you're saying, you know, Festus, kind of the signing in Portland was kind of out of the blue. They were competing against themselves. Is it probable at this point that they kind of looked at their roster and they were like, oh, huh, you know what we did? We signed a bunch of guys that don't like play interior defense and don't really have good perimeter defense. We just have like a couple of wings that are good. And you know, like who's been injured as well, which is, he's their best defender, and that's really hurt him. Maybe Crabb is going to play some defense, but like their starting backcourt is bad defensively, and their front court is bad defensively, and so they looked at the roster and said, like, well, we really need to get this guy, and it might not pan out, but $7 million is for 2 years, you know. For $14 million for 2 years, $7 million each is probably worth the risk, because, my God, we have nobody to defend.
Yeah, and that but the funny thing last night is, like, or the funny thing this year for them is they can't defend the three-point line.
Right.
I mean, it's like, you know, and that's what happened to them last night. I mean, they were just getting torched. I mean, it wasn't, like, a terrible signing. I just remember talking to the Blazers Edge guys this summer in Vegas. It was kind of like, it's a huge risk, and they were asking us, like, what do you guys think about his future? And, like, he's injured. I mean, it was like we had no idea where this injury was going. We've seen these injuries go sideways with big guys before, and, you know, it's just a bad luck situation. And I think it's just unfortunate. I wish he had panned out. This is going to be a hot take that I'm going to temper a little bit. Once in my
temper
head.
Temper it? Just let it burn, man.
I'm going to temper. No. I'm going to temper this one. I really would have actually liked to see our squad. There was a large part of me that wanted to see the same team come back.
Uh-oh.
Just because I was attached, and just because I just wanted to see them get that redemption. So I think I'm attached to these guys that kind of brought us up from, you know, the drudgery of decades of terribleness. And so, like, part of me is like Bazemore, Azealy, like all these guys that, like, you know, bench guys.
I did not mention Harrison Barnes in that little
that you have the Harrison Barnes hot takes on lock.
So wait, would you say that you are, so here's a question, Nate. Would you have rather that would you rather that the Warriors
would you rather
would you rather would you rather that the Warriors had returned the same squad and won the championship and beat Cleveland in the finals?
Coming back
from 3-1, or would you rather that
they lose, the Warriors beat, they losing to KD?
No, win, either way they're winning in this scenario.
Oh, I mean,
yeah.
Jeez, would I rather a team forever for my entire life win a championship and then try to three-peat with that same unit? Yeah, that would be awesome.
No, I mean, assuming that they like, assuming last year happened, like this year, I'm saying, like, if they hadn't been able to get KD, would it be sweeter for you if they had, like, run the same team back on, signed Harrison to whatever offer sheet that he ended up signing for, assuming that the Mavs hadn't gone after him, if they didn't have to get rid of Bogut because they hadn't brought on KD, like, if they did run back the same 73-9 team and then win, would it be sweeter for you that way?
Or I'm not gonna lie, it would certainly be sweeter. I'm not mad about KD.
So you're saying you wish they hadn't gotten KD, basically.
No, I'm not saying that. See, here you go with the Stephen A. Smith hot takes. I'm not trying to go there. I'm just saying, like, yeah, I think I grew attached to these guys who, you know, this is going to be the Warriors team, or last year's team, the year before. This is the Warriors team that finally brought us to contender status, right? So there's a little bit more attachment to those guys than there would be to other guys.
And yet you hold no no warmth in your heart for Mark Jackson.
Why are you just?
He's like he's
trying to start flame wars.
Bram has he has a checklist.
Every GSOM flame war ever.
Yeah, he's got a checklist of like the hot button.
How do you feel about Joe Smith? How do you feel about
Joe
Smith?
We don't need to talk about Mark Jackson, man.
We don't need to talk about Joe Smith either. That's for sure.
No, there's no need to talk about those things.
So before
I'm sorry. It's my way of welcoming you back onto the podcast. I have all these questions that I've been like.
It feels warm. It feels warm.
It's nice and warm. Yeah. That's for sure.
Before we move on from Portland,
it's so cold in California.
Because we were talking about Portland, and I think we talked about this in Vegas as well with the Blazers Edge guys, but let's revisit it a little bit because, again, as you mentioned, the problem here was defending the 3-point line, and this concept, and they asked us like, what do you guys think is Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum, like, is that a sustainable backcourt, like? Like, can you build a contender with those two guys in the backcourt? And, like, I've been kind of the whole time I've been saying, like, yeah, I think you can. I mean, you need to have the right pieces around them, which they clearly don't right now. But is that...
But I just think that... Is that changed now? I don't know. I didn't feel that. I felt like you couldn't.
Okay.
Like, when we were talking this summer, I was definitely not. I was like, I just don't... Because with the thing with Steph and Clay, right? So the reason why it works is that Clay has legit... almost three guard or the three man size, you know, where he can guard small forwards with ease at times, you know? And that Steph has now figured out a way to be defensively like very effective, where before I think his size was came into the league and he would get punked by bigger guards all the time. But now he's learned how to leverage his sort of like sneaky, like rock climber strength, like PE teacher, whatever, wiry sort of stuff into like, and his hands being so fast, he just be like, wham! And then like the ball is a steal. I mean, he gets like, he's amazing at creating dysfunction and creating steals and that whole thing. So like defensively, they actually are as a tandem incredibly effective. Whereas I just don't ever see Lillard or McCollum as a duo growing into being that. Like they're always going to have the firepower, but I just don't think in crunch time in the playoffs that they'll ever be able to truly back it up. And so then it becomes a matter of surrounding them with really, really, really plus defenders. And they just have not been able to do that. Especially considering that probably their defensive prize offseason acquisition is not going to play this year in Azili.
You know, this reminds me of for a long time, the Warriors were always like would get a player who is really good offensively and not good defensively, or in some cases really good defensively and not good offensively, and continuing to like, oh, how are we going to balance this team? We got this guy sucks at defense, so we got to get a really good defender just to balance him. And that seems like the situation that they would have to be in right now, where they would need, you know, their another wing and a power forward and a center really that like are all top, you know, 6, 7, 8 defenders in the league in order to balance their inability to guard the 3-point line and, you know, keep guys from getting into the lane. And it kind of like highlights the fact that the Warriors kind of, you know, started being really, really successful in getting to this championship level when they have a number of two-way players that are really good defensively and really good offensively, or some balance of good there rather than horrible on one end. And we kind of like, I don't think we value that enough. Like that, you know, you can have a guy like Klay Thompson where you don't have to really worry about him that much on either end of the floor at any given time.
Yeah. And if he's having a slump at the beginning of the year, like he did the last 2 years, like he's still going to kill it on defense. And so he's still a plus on the floor. Like it's still worth him to have him on the floor. If Lillard or McCollum have an off game offensively, it's like, why you can't for them to be on the court necessarily, you know? And then the other thing about that is that if they aren't going to turn into those defensive players, then you're basically saying, well, they need to get all these great two-way players. So they need to overhaul their roster. These two guys not going to work with the roster that they have currently. But how are they going to leverage it? They're not a large market team. They can't necessarily like have the money to go out and sign these huge free agents. Like, for example, I don't think you see ever like a player of Durant's caliber going to Portland, even though Portland's an awesome town. It's just not the same thing, you know? So I don't know. I think that we'll see them perennially be like first, second round. Maybe they overachieve one year and like make it to the Western Conference Finals, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, I think it's I think there's like a more basic thing that's going on with that backcourt, and it's not so much just defensive ability with Monte Ellis and Steph Curry. There was a defensive ability issue there. I think with them, it's also just a height issue. And what you're seeing, like with a team with the, like the Warriors that has Klay Thompson, Sean Livingston, they can throw Iguodala out there. They can get switches for Durant on one of those guys. Is they are just abusing? They're taking those guys into the post and just abusing them.
Yeah.
The thing is, they're not that many teams that can do that. So yeah, right now they're like a first, second round playoff team, and they're not terrible. But I think they're actually in a bit of a tougher situation than the Warriors were, maybe. The Warriors were not good when they had Ellis and Curry. I think whatever this comparison is made, that's kind of glossed over. Like, the Warriors were terrible. They were not a playoff contender at that time. The Blazers have a situation where they're decent. They can get to the playoffs every year, and they've done this for like two decades before, like Lillard and McCollum, since like the last time they reached the finals, right? They've been like a first, second round playoff team. So then the question becomes, well, what do they need to do to get over the hump? And is there any way they could imagine shifting around these assets to figuring that out? And I think right now, when you look at their losing, their slump right now, the situation there in terms of, maybe not even making the playoffs, it's a possibility. Well, this is where we thought they would be last year when they lost Aldridge, right? Everyone thought they would be terrible. And they were, Terry Stotts did an amazing job. They had a good year. So like, are they actually not that good?
Right.
They're in a really tough spot. I don't know how to figure it out. They're gonna have to see how this whole season plays out, and then really sit down and think about the roster and whether it is time to make a serious move.
Or they do that mid season. I mean, like if you're looking at it right now, and like it's not like next year is gonna be different because some guy comes out of nowhere on their bench, right? And like, Aminu is a factor for them, but him coming back isn't going to get them, isn't going to move the needle that much from them being last in defensive efficiency in the league, right? Like, they might jump to 28th, but like maybe you need to trade CJ McCollum right now for a guy who can defend in the post.
Yeah, but what are you going to get? I mean, who are you going to trade him to? Where does he fit a need? He's such a kind of a specific player. I know he has a lot of upside, but...
Yeah, it's a tough question.
I also think that it's hilarious that we haven't done a podcast in like a week and a half, and we've spent 25 minutes talking about the Blazers.
they're a super intriguing team.
And I actually have one more.
My favorite teams, actually. I love watching them.
Well, and I think the thing about the Blazers, too, is that they have really, really, really smart fans. They're covered in part by an incredibly well-run website in Blazers Edge, at which we have a bunch of friends who work there. Like, they have one of the most knowledgeable staffs of any of the SB Nation blogs. And it's an only child syndrome. You know, they're the only show in town. Yeah. I mean, there's some college basketball, like University of whatever other stuff is up there. University of
what's somewhere near
Portland. Oh, boy. Sorry. The Portland Pilots you're referring to.
Yeah. Totally. But, it's like the only pro sports... And you look at that in certain markets, and people feel incredibly attached to that team. You know, I know that Portland fanatics are like almost a cut above some other team, area sports fans. But one thing that I was thinking about watching that game is, again, and this like somehow doesn't really get addressed that much, but dude, Durant could have been the centerpiece of this Blazers team for the last 10 years.
I think that's cruel and unusual, dude.
But it's not wrong. It's true. Not
wrong, but that's cruel.
I mean,
because we're talking about another injured center right now.
The Odin thing to me is one of the most heart-wrenching, because you could see flashes when he was on the court. You could see, and especially when he was at Ohio State. And I mean, really, if you put money down in, what was that, 04, 05 or whenever they came out, that Mike Conley Jr. would have like 20 times the productivity of Greg Oden, of them both coming out of the same high school and Ohio State. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And It's just one of those huge what ifs, like what if, and I feel like unfortunately the Blazers organization has just been attached to too many of those, you know, with Jordan, yeah. with everything, and it's sure. not,
or even, it's not something that, or even Brandon Roy,
yeah, I mean, and for it specifically to be the same recurring problem, like people's knees are hard,
it's
you know,
true,
you know, like Walton, it's not like
feet, yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's just, yeah, it's a sad. I mean, we sit here and act like it's sad. They also did get to the finals in the 90s. I got to say that. The Blazers have not been terrible.
Fucking,
but it's a sad, hard luck story.
Jordan, well, Jordan was happy to see them in the finals. So I'll just say that.
Jesus.
But point taken about us talking about Portland a lot. I think that, so back to the Warriors, we've kind of... I don't know. It feels like the Warriors, exactly to this point, like we're not talking about them a lot. And it almost feels like they're like a back burner story in the league. Whereas like when we came into the league, when we came into the season, it was, oh, we're going to talk, like everybody's going to be talking about the Warriors every day. I think, who was it? Tim Bontemps, who moved out here to cover the Warriors on a daily basis, you know, kind of under this assumption that like, oh, you know, there's not going to be another story in sports right. other than the Warriors and everybody's going to be talking about them every day. And I think that's, you know, there's still a huge story in the NBA, but it kind of, I don't know. It kind of feels like it's now, you know, well, this is them. They're not like, if they were 28-0, then might be a different story, but instead they're 24-4 and we've just kind of like forgotten it. Like, Oh, by the way, that is they're on track based on their current win losses to win 71 games.
And terrible.
I don't
terrible. They're taking steps back. Fire Kerr.
I don't even. They're not even trying. They're not even Yo, trying.
There are,
they're
are
not even trying to
Kerr
win.
Stands out in the world, man. It's crazy. It's crazy when they pop up. I just want to smack them with 2x4s. But so I haven't. Have you ever seen the show High Maintenance? I think it's called. It's on HBO.
No, I haven't.
No.
Have either of you seen the show?
No.
Okay, so basically the premise of I'm going to tell you how this show is exactly like the 2016-2017 Golden State Warriors.
15 minutes later, we'll get there. I trust you.
Don't trust me. That's your first mistake. But so it's all about, I've only seen like two episodes, but it's all about this weed delivery guy, actually, who is in New York City, and he bikes around delivering marijuana to the inhabitants of New York. And he is the central character of the show. It's all based around him and the people that he meets. But really, what you realize after about like 2 minutes is that the point of it is not him and his interactions, but sometimes like they'll start a conversation and he'll meet somebody and then the camera will just like follow that person as they go on throughout their day. Or even sometimes it'll follow that person and then just start following like a totally separate other person. And you just realize that the construct of the show is not to really like, oh, let's talk about the weed dealership on bike scene in New York, which is a huge industry, I might add. But that the point is like to use that as a filter through which to explore like what are these people's lives like in Brooklyn and Manhattan, and what is it to be a modern human being in New York City. And to that same extent, I do feel that like there's only so much that we could be interested in talking about the titular character, the weed delivery guy, who is only known as the guy on the show. And the Warriors, to a certain extent, are that character. And they're a way that every other team is going to show some inner truth about themselves when coming up against the Warriors, because the Warriors is such a unique team, and that we end up like talking more about the other teams, because you can't just always talk about like, oh yeah, Kevin Durant was really good. He made the ball in the hoop a couple times. You know, it's like, you know, it's like how many times can you watch somebody deliver weed before you're like, all right, I'm tired of this. So.
Well, to try to gather meaning from this anecdote, wouldn't I? No, it's good. I'm joking.
It is a good
anecdote. I think that we've reached the point already. Maybe last night, but we've certainly seen it in a few games recently where teams like they come into this game against the Warriors and they're like, you know, we're gonna lose, so let's not try, or like let's sit our guys.
We saw that with the Knicks.
Need some
and Carmelo
rest.
Didn't
yeah,
even play.
Exactly. It's like why fight the inevitable, right? Which then there's less drama, because you know, even if the Warriors don't end up winning by 45 points every night, it's probably because the other team wasn't trying to win, and then so you know both teams just kind of you know don't play hard. Rashid. But
so also having living in New York now and listening to way more sports talk radio in New York City than I probably should, just because it's hilarious to listen to these guys call. I'm like, the thing about the Jets, I'm telling you, it's crazy, the accents. But people were ragging on Carmelo for missing that game. And then the other funny, cruel aside is that then he said that the game against Denver was a must win, and then he played that game because that was his old team, and then they lost that game too, which is kind of hilarious. But I think that, again, like, that does say something about the Knicks and like, what's the timbre of that team? Like, what's the inner fabric of that team where Carmelo, even though Rose was talking about that they had super team aspirations at the beginning of the year and everybody laughed it off because it wasn't real, but if they actually thought that, you would think that they would come and like get up for that type of matchup. You know, it's on national TV. It's on TNT. It was, I mean, not that this had anything to do with it, but it was the day that Craig Sager died. Like his old coworkers were there. Like, it was an incredibly emotionally charged game. And, you know, Carmelo just had decided ahead of time to no show. And I think that, again, like, using the Warriors as a spectrum through which to sort of understand the inner workings of other teams, like, maybe that is who Carmelo is, and that's sort of been the bad rap against him throughout his career. And how is that going to affect Kristaps and, you know, stuff like that? Like,
was it Carmelo's decision? It wasn't a coaching thing. Do you know?
I don't know. This is all going off of sports talk radio in New York. Right, so like, right. So like, take that, a lot of that with a grain of salt. I'm not like personally friends with Carmelo Anthony. Hey, how you feeling, buddy?
Because I think you could get the Popovich thing, right? Where they like he'll just, for whatever reasons, he'll sometimes decide to rest all of his stars and just, like, you know, take a scheduled loss or try to win the game with other guys because he's played mind games with the opponents where they're like, oh, this is going to be easy. He rested all of his guys, and as we saw, you know, a year or two ago that the Spurs ended up beating the Warriors without their big three because the Warriors didn't show up either. And so, you know, I think that there are some, you know, coaching strategies and mind games and extenuating circumstances that can be involved there. But that still says something about the other team that, like, this isn't just another game. There's, like, something different that they're going to try, right?
Yeah, and it didn't come across as mind games. I mean, it came across as Carmelo said one thing, the organization sort of said a different thing. Mm. Phil Jackson came out and said something else. Like, it's not the Spurs where Popovich is like, this is what's happening, and then all those guys don't say a single thing, and they just either rest or don't, you know? It was like Carmelo was in the news, and he was talking too much, and he was like, I need a day off because of the Olympics, and then all the New York people were like, well, why did you play in the Olympics if you weren't going to, like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it, you know, it created this sort of like unnecessarily contentious snowball effect in the New York media where it was just like, how could you not get up? Like, this is the best team in the league. Obviously, like, you need to figure out what your team is doing, and you're going to no show. And again, like, I'm not like, I am sort of casting judgment on Carmelo, but like, I totally am. All right. But it's more revealing in the sense of, like, I don't think that conversation becomes so so nasty if it's not the Warriors. You know, there's something about the Warriors that brings out this inner truth about a team, or it seemingly starts to do that. That I, you know, it's really interesting, especially we're only 28 games into the season right now. You know,
yeah.
What is it going to look like in a month?
Can we just a sidebar? Can we talk a little bit about Phil Jackson and, like, is it, like, are we all in agreement that he's really terrible for what the Knicks are doing? I mean, he's good at talent evaluation. He certainly is able to do that. But, like, he does not seem like a very stable, you know, visionary leader for where they need to go and where the league needs to go in the short term. Am I wrong about this?
Yeah, give me an example of what you're thinking.
Well, even things like the kind of the discord with like he says one thing or whatever, and Carmelo mm-hmm. says a different thing, and we've seen that a number of times where he talks to the media about, you know, whatever he wants with regards to his players, and maybe that's also, he's always been kind of a mind game guy too, right? Like, he's mm-hmm. he might be doing that with purpose, but is that successful anymore? It doesn't seem from an outsider perspective that like these guys really, you know, love him and trust him to do the right thing. And I think that he's also made some questionable GM decisions, like bringing in Joakim Noah on a huge contract. And I mean, the Warriors, he could not, like, JaVale McGee looked like, like an all-star. He looked like a Hall of Famer against him. It was disgusting. I don't know. And I guess the jury's still out maybe on how the Derrick Rose signing goes, kind of depending on what he does next year and whether they make the playoffs and all this stuff. But I don't know. Like,
I think
let me rephrase it in kind of comparison to the reverence that he has in you know, NBA circles and basketball lore, right? Like, he is, you know, one of the top visionaries of all time because of all of the championships that he's got under, you know, with MJ and with Shaq and Kobe. But we think of him as this, you know, basketball demigod and maybe it's just a comparison to that idea, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like, he's certainly not the worst, you know, GM and president in the league, but I think that we still think more highly of him than what we've seen from him as a leader of that team. But again, that's I haven't actually given that much thought until just now. So
I have some thoughts, but I want to hear what Nate has to say first.
Oh man, I haven't really been following the Knicks situation that closely. Noah, Rose, Carmelo. I wasn't sure how that was going to work out.
Lopez, like getting rid of Robin Lopez for, you know, in replace, like, and then Noah replacing him. I don't know. Just doesn't feel moves.
I think the issue is we imagine this guy as someone who would come in, present a big vision and see the team to back to glory, right? By pursuing that vision. And I think that's what, that this guy who we always thought had the big vision of basketball figured out is not doing that very well with the Knicks right now, right? So it's like to your point about the contrast between how we imagined him as a coach and how we imagine him now, that's probably been the most surprising thing that to everyone that ever said, when my dad, God bless his soul, said this all the time, you know, well, let Phil Jackson coach the Warriors, see what he can do. I could coach Jordan. Well, you know, he's not exactly proving those people wrong right now. Right. So,
well, and I think, you know, maybe I buried the lead a little bit with what that vision is, and the vision is the triangle, and this kind of idea the triangle is sacrosanct, and you know, that still kind of not being given up a little bit. And go ahead, Brem.
Well, part of the thing about Phil Jackson that kind of pisses me off is that I think part of the, like, Phil Jackson always seemed larger than life, you know, and it was because of his attachment to those six championships with MJ and the whole his being in the middle and, like, writing the book, and he was called the Zen Master. He's called, you know, he preaches a brand of basketball or a vision of life that is sort of alluring, especially for us West Coast hippy-dippy types, you know. It's like, oh, yeah, Zen Master. Yeah, I want to get some of that up in, you know, whatever, in my life. Like, I wish I could approach, like Phil Jackson approaches, you know, coaching Michael Jordan. But the sort of what you've seen in New York is that that sheen of, like, moral correctness or – like putting, I feel like there was something about him where you would put, like, morality first, or it was his vision. It was his, like, attention to detail. It was his Zen calm mind. Like, you know, read The Art of War and here, read this book, Kobe, stop being such an asshole, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, like, dude hired paid money for Derrick Rose when Derrick Rose was in the middle of a rape case. Like, and it was not pretty. And I know that he was acquitted and the potentially going into a criminal trial in the future. And the only trial that they had was the not criminal trial. I forget how you say that, but you know, but you know, she was looking for money, and that's how they painted it. But like, and also that he then had hired, you know, had sort of staked his like entire centerpiece of his career or of the team on Carmelo. The one thing that he has done is he drafted like the one of the most fun players in the league in Kristaps Porzingis, who I honestly think is going to just be comedic gold and also basketball all-stardom for the next 10 or 15 years. That guy, that kid is built for New York, A, which is very rare, and B, is hilarious, and C, can play his ass off on the court.
Yeah.
But there are some elements of Phil, and then the secondary thing too, so not only the Rose situation, which doesn't get talked about enough, I think, which is horrible. Once if you read the transcripts of the 911 calls and all that stuff, it's like, ah, man, like
it's an uncomfortable discussion topic. I think
it's an uncomfortable
people don't
discussion.
Talk about it
yeah.
a lot.
I know. Well, that's why nobody talks about it. But so he hired. I mean, all that stuff was out. Like either they did their due diligence or they didn't. And if they did the due diligence, then like they had read all the 911 transcripts, and then they're like, we're cool with that. Or if they didn't, then they didn't do, you know, proper research. Anyways, so that being itself. He also made the inappropriate comment about LeBron James and his posse.
Right.
Like, there's things that Phil Jackson has done that I don't think that he is prepared for this 24/7 post-truth news cycle that we currently live within, where he used to be able to just say things and sort of get away with it because people were like, oh, Phil... Phil's super smart. Oh, Phil likes Zen Buddhism because he's called the Zen master. Like, I don't know if he actually practices Buddhism. Also, what does that even make a difference? Like, he can still be an asshole, you know? but, like, so the whole posse comment, it just, it comes across as so socially unaware. And you just kind of get the feeling that he'd rather be back in Wyoming or South Dakota, like, chilling, not having been tasked with running this organization. He keeps making... comments, and again, like he hasn't turned anything around.
Well,
but
yeah,
he did Kristaps. So
I mean, again, it's like it feels like a figurehead thing that we're still kind of seeing the figurehead and not seeing, you know, the results of his actual work and his actual presence there.
But I do think that there's cracks.
Maybe it's too early.
There's cracks in his story now. For the first time,
right,
you know?
Right. Well, and maybe being in New York where there's more media covering you than anywhere else probably in the world, like it's gonna highlight some of that stuff eventually. Okay, so we've talked about the Blazers, we've talked about the Knicks. what else should we I guess we're actually 40 minutes in here. I want to talk about, and maybe we should save this for the next podcast, but I really want to talk about whether there is anything to do with the Warriors as far as improving this team. Like, is like okay. So one sentence from Michi. Like, if you could improve the team by, you know, with personnel moves, what would you do? One sentence, Nate. Go.
Vergeau McAdoo for Cousins.
Okay. All right. I'm game.
Wait. I'm
Cousins,
sorry.
We need to talk about too, but again, we're already late here. So.
I mean, there's plus like a plus what?
Oh, that's it.
Just straight up.
Man, this is okay. We're in a post truth world, post fact world, so I don't need any trade checkers or anything like that.
All right, my one sentence is no more Mark Jackson on ESPN coverage of the team.
Oh boy.
That would improve things. I totally.
I mean,
it would improve my life.
Can I address your question though directly? I think right now we're still at a, and we talked the last time I think I was on a podcast we talked about this. We're still at a point where the team is still coming together, which is
it's
frightening. But yeah. It's like, you know, Ian Clark is really starting to come into his own now. We still haven't seen Kevon Looney. JaVale McGee is finally like. Finding his way on this team. David West has played, and we didn't talk about that. David West has played really well. Like
Zaza has played really well too.
Zaza's playing better. So like
Zaza's passing is way better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. And rebound, his rebound rate is really good too.
That's what he was known for. I think the issue that everyone was asking, right? It's the other funny thing. The issue that everyone was running about was like, wow, they're not going to have a rim protector. And now they got Durant blocking shots. Draymond Green blocking shots, JaVale McGee blocking shots. I mean, and then Zaza and David West playing really good position defense to help protect the rim. So like, I think we're not yet at a point where we can make concrete assessments of what they need, because I don't even think we've seen their full potential yet, which is admittedly frightening, and it sounds ridiculous to say that. But I even think Durant's still figuring out when he should take over and be really aggressive and when he should defer. And I think Curry's kind of ready to defer. I think Curry's like, you know, if I need to pass this game, I'll pass. But Durant sometimes is like, you know, this is a team with a lot of talent. Maybe I shouldn't just take over and score 40 today. But like, once he figures that out, and once they all figure out, like, hey, Clay's getting 60 tonight, we'll all pass to him. Curry's got 40 tonight, we'll pass to him. Like, once they actually get a better feel for that, and they're not just kind of guessing, it's going to be...
I have two words also to answer Ivan's question, but Damian Jones also is coming down the pipe.
He's coming down the pipe. I mean, it's this team is crazy, and I think that's why it's like hard to even write about them. Like, what do you anything you were to identify as a weakness for this team right now, or anything you would, like I was saying the other day in our backroom, our Slack chat, like the funny thing is like there's nothing to argue about right now. And like the biggest argument on GSM recently related to basketball was, you know, like it was like, were they the Knicks game? They won by how many points? It was like a 20-point win or whatever it was. Whatever they won by, like, were they tired? Were they going through the motions? Because it legitimately looked like in a blowout win that they were going through the motions. And like, how do you go through the motions and blow someone out? That's crazy. Even if they're shorthanded, it's still the NBA. And that's what this team is. Like, they can go through the motions and blow teams out. And that's hard to write about. It's hard to assess in the big picture, like, are they ready for the championship? I mean, I don't know. It's like a really weird – this is, like, one of the weirdest seasons I've seen. I don't know, like, if – it would be interesting to talk to someone who was, like, really around and in tune, like, when the Bulls were in the midst of their dominance. Like, did they ever have a moment like this where it was sort of just like, yeah, this – they're meeting expectations by being on pace to win 71 games.
Well, and going back to how, you know, we're talking about how teams are approaching them a little differently. I mean, that makes it even harder to gauge how good they actually are, because we know they're getting better, but we also don't know how hard other teams are playing against them. And then there's like these weird situations where like they've given up by the half, or they've given up before the game started. And then like, you know, there was that Pacers game, which I got to go to, which was super fun, where, you know, they were blowing them out, but then there was like the game within the game of like getting the, you know, never having a shot that wasn't assisted. And like the players were just passing up layups so that they could try to get an assist instead, because they just could. They just like, let's just play this other thing to keep ourselves entertained. And so we don't, even then we don't really know. I hadn't realized this until just checking it today, that they've crept up to fifth in defensive rating in the league.
Exactly.
Kind of out of nowhere. Number one in blocks, number one in steals, in the league. But like, what does it actually mean? With like how to gauge how good this team is and how good they're going to perform. And then you have, you know, the difference between the regular season and the playoffs, which, you know, I would even argue this is a playoff team. This team is built for the playoffs. They're not built for the regular season. And yet, like, here we are.
Yeah, that's true. That's good. And I think that's why some people thought that they'd be like a, you know, and this is still likely to me, like they'll end up in like the 60 win range, right? In the 60s somewhere, not again in 73 range, just because, you know, yeah, they seem like a regular season team. They seem like a team that's going to hit some lulls. Maybe eventually they'll lose two in a row. I mean, this is like crazy talk. It's crazy talk, and I don't know, like, I don't think anyone has a frame of reference for the words with which to describe what they're seeing right now. And I think if you were to ask that team right now, I don't even think they know what they can be right now. I think they're still figuring it out. And I think they just know, like, we're not quite playing to our potential, and we don't know what that will look like. Because what would it look like for this team to play a full 48 minutes at full strength? We don't know, because they blow teams out and they sit people for the last quarter. Clay scores 60 through three quarters and sits in the last quarter. We'll never know.
That's just, it's crazy.
Which is kind of scary too, because they're not getting those game time, reps of dealing with adversity and crunch time. Like, we won't know until it happens, and it doesn't happen very often, and they won't get good until it actually is happening. And like, they've done a little too much, like, you know, ISO ball in those situations when they have happened on those rare occurrences. So it's like, it's going to be hard to gauge really until we get into April and May and June. Right. Like,
yeah, it's crazy. And it's the coverage, like you were saying, like Tim Bontemps moving out, which, you know, makes sense. It's like, it's one of those things that, they're still oversaturated. Right. So it's like there's oversaturation of coverage, and everyone's just standing around like, wow, this is crazy. So what are you even supposed to?
Yeah,
I mean, it does get boring to even talk about them after a while. I'll admit that. I mean, I'm enjoying the season, but
are we boring you here, Nate? Is this why you've been on sabbatical? No, you've just been so bored by
it. Yeah, actually, you guys are boring me sick.
I think that if we wake up in like a couple weeks and we realize that the Trump victory and the Warriors being so heavily stacked were just like our alien overlords trying to figure out the ways to like fuck with our heads the most and just like see how far we would like suspend disbelief, then I would be okay with that. If we wake up and like Cohen still owns the team and we're like, ah, shit.
I'm waiting for that to happen, actually. Yeah. And I'm glad the dream has lasted long enough where we got like to two finals. Yeah. I thought maybe it would be after one finals, or like maybe we'd win the last one. Like, I actually, after the 3-1 thing, I was like, okay, now I'm going to wake up. It's just going to be like Cohan and Maggette will still be on the team or something.
All right. On that note, I think it's time to.
Since 3-1. I just want to say that, like, life has not been great since 3-1, man. Look at what happened, fucking Ohio.
This is definitely the time when we should close this podcast. Thanks, guys, for joining me today. We probably, for anybody who's still listening, probably won't get another podcast in before Christmas, but we'll try. And if we don't, have a happy holidays.
It would be fun to try to get Ryan back on. I know that we should probably talk about this after we're not actually recording, but if we did, Ryan, if you're listening, we would welcome you back on and also make another bet.
I'm sure all of these listeners who have no idea who Ryan is are super enthralled by this this invitation. but let's talk about that offline. We'll have some guests on soon in the new year. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, blogtalkradio.com if you haven't already. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Golden State of Mindcast.
Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.